You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, earth, spirit, community, all six areas of the healthful living model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant.
Now, today we're going to deviate from our normal realm of things, not that anything's necessarily normal on Reality Sandwich, but I'm going to speak about some broader subjects because I have just been thinking about as we talk about on the show, the broader expansion of consciousness, the change that our planet is going through, the evolution that we're all experiencing as we get more information about the nature of life, more information about the nature of planet, the entire planet, people being more tuned into what's going on globally, the impact of really everything that we do on the environment, on one another. We're gaining so much more awareness and knowledge of these things. And I've become increasingly fascinated with what are the people who know things doing to help the people that are learning. And in a simple, let me just bring that to the kind of my current idea here is this notion of how are wealthy countries helping less fortunate countries. A news story caught my eye this past week about the increasing gap between the wealthy and the poor in the world and the greater concentrations of wealth amongst, you know, fewer and fewer people. And other story caught my eye about the impact of what those big countries are doing to help little countries. And typically what we hear is of government subsidy programs and money being wasted, and yet not much is really being done. So last night I had the opportunity to be at our Toastmasters group and learning quite a lot about different efforts that are being made to have a positive impact around the world. And I just wanted to bring in today's show a couple of different perspectives of things that I find tremendously inspiring about efforts that are being made by small organizations and individuals like you and me to apply our own thinking and our own efforts to help make an impact in other places and to get feedback about that impact in ways that we never could before. So I think that's tremendously inspiring. So to that end, we're going to first bring on Heidi Smith. We know Heidi from our Toastmasters group, and Heidi was telling us all about this amazing organization called Kiva.org. And what's fascinating about it is that people like you and me, for just a few dollars, can have an impact on something happening on the other side of the planet. So let me just make sure that Heidi is with us on the line. Heidi,
yes,
are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Now, you're just like you, me, or anybody else who's listening out there, and you're not necessarily an international financier, but something got you curious about having an impact in other people's lives.
Yes.
So how did that happen?
Well, last year I was kind of randomly out at a happy hour for a nonprofit called Kiva.org and got more information about what Kiva does, and they work with countries, international countries, third world countries, and just kind of got more information about it, and I wanted to give back, and I was able to loan as little as $25 to make an impact. And the past year I've been doing this nonstop giving back to the community, and it's just been very interesting.
Now, you're getting – it's more than just giving money though, right? It's not like you're just signing up somewhere and $25 disappears. Like, you know, we used to put money in a UNICEF can. You never knew if it ever helped anybody.
You know, you're able to – with Kiva, you go online, you look at entrepreneurs in third world countries, and Kiva partners with existing microfinance institutions worldwide. And through this, you loan $25 through Kiva. Kiva sends it to their microfinance partner, and then the microfinance partner will distribute it to the entrepreneur, and you'll receive updates on how their business is doing. They start their business, and you receive updates typically – 6 to 9 months throughout this process on how the business is doing, their first customer, and when they pay back the loan. And Kiva will email that to you, and they'll also post it onto their website. So you'll see the progress being made, and typically the entrepreneur will pay back the loan within 6 to 12 months.
Right, right. I mean, what a really cool use of the internet to be able to get feedback from what's happening, you know, in another part of the world with just a few dollars. You know, I remember seeing for so many years those campaigns, you know, you can help somebody for, you know, a dollar a day, that kind of thing. And I think for us here in the West, for sure, to even think of, you know, what a dollar a day means to somebody, it's so disconnected. It's so we have really like no conception of what that really is. But now to be able to get, you know, that kind of information and realize that, you know, what you're doing with a very small amount of money is having an impact, you know, just I think that would really facilitate a great number of people being involved. Is that what's happening with the site? Are more people willing to participate now that they have more information about how they're doing well?
Oh, absolutely. Kiva gets, I was reading on their website, they get between 15,000 and 20,000 visitors a day. And because you can loan as little as $25, that's Kiva's top on it. You can only loan $25, but they attract, for each entrepreneur, they get about between 10 and 20 different lenders, and they lend $25. And with the use of modern technology and being able to make an impact with just $25, it's attracted a lot of people nationwide. And Kiva's been featured on a lot of national shows like Oprah, The Today Show, and even Bill Clinton did a little gig on it. So it's definitely getting out there and becoming almost like a household topic brand.
Heidi, do you know anything about the microfinance partners? Who are these people and what do they do?
Well, the microfinance partners, Kiva has partnered with them, and they're worldwide. And microfinance, it's really, they do a small amount of loan, savings, and other basic financial services specifically to the poor. And it's more just small amounts of money, small loans, and small savings. And it's different, and the microfinance is differentiated through services that are different from what formal banks provide. And Kiva has developed these partnerships worldwide just by through networking and things like that.
And are they people local in the area that know the people or know the people's needs? Are they large world bankers? I mean, do you have any idea? Like,
they range from what I know. It's small nonprofit organizations to large commercial banks, and they see the need to help the poor with financial services and the challenges that these poor people face with that we don't see because of modern technology and being able to walk in and open up a bank account and ask for a loan and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Hmm.
I'll tell you why I like this idea is just I like the idea of having more meaning behind the actions that we take, and especially with our money, because I mean, money is it's one of the six circles of healthful living, because the systems behind how we use money is as a resource is how do we share the knowledge and resources amongst us all collectively on the planet. And the more meaning you have behind what you're doing with your money, the more intentional you're being behind it, I think the greater the impact and usage of that as a resource versus, like, as I said earlier, just giving something blindly, often out of felt obligation to do so, but with no real connection to the outcome. And the more connection that we can have behind the actions that we take and the things that we do, especially with where we put our money, what we reinforce, what we want to be a part of, I think the greater the benefit really to absolutely everybody and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Can you share the example of the person that you helped?
Yes, yes. So last May, my first loan, I went onto the Kiva website and browsed through probably about 40 to 50 different profiles of entrepreneurs in different third world countries, somewhere in Africa, South America, and the Middle East. I chose a lady in Ghana, Africa. Her name was Faustina Naini, and she wanted to start her own beauty salon. She needed $850 total. I loaned $25. through PayPal, and then the next day, about probably 10 other individuals like me loaned as well. So she had a total of $850. Kiva collected this within 10 hours. It was very amazing. And then the microfinance partner of Kiva got this money and distributed it to her on May 8th of 2007, and I got that email that it was being distributed to her. So I kind of got to see the progress being made and things like that from the actual time she received it. And then over the next course of the 9 months, I received updates on how her business was going, when it opened, and how the impact and progress being made in the community. And then on February 13th, 2008, she repaid the loan in full to the microfinance partner, who then gave it to Kiva. And then shortly after that, I think the next day, I received the $25 in my account, and I decided to reloan again to another lady, in this time in Pakistan, that wanted to do a retail store. So you can either withdraw the money or you can reloan again, and 90% of the lenders on Kiva will actually reloan again to another entrepreneur.
It makes the planet smaller and more intimate, and I like that. And I like the way of utilizing this, and that it's not necessarily needs to be something that it's you're helping somebody in Pakistan, because this type of a model, when we think of a broader global family or even a local community family, are the types of things and the types of behaviors that that I feel that we need to be engaging in collectively to help support one another in the broader human family.
Well, isn't this very Catherine Austin Fisk-esque? You know, what does she talk about? The community, people loaning within their communities and loaning to others, as opposed to the money going into some, you know, big corporate hands and then having only small little amounts trickle back.
Exactly. Right. You're way better off investing in the local entrepreneur who wants to open up a bakery in your neighborhood, you know, than you are in some megalithic big company out there that you're hoping will be around forever to pay you back the benefits.
Well, because,
later.
Well, and the wealth isn't spread evenly in that case, right? It just makes the rich people richer and doesn't really help those end people very much.
And again, you have personal feedback and knowledge of where the money is going, how it's being utilized, and how it even benefits you personally from being involved in the whole ordeal.
So people that don't know who I was talking about, her name is Catherine Austin Fitz, and she has a website called Solari, S-O-L-A-R-I, solari.com. And she talks, she's a very, very fascinating woman and really just trying to change the whole nature of how we see our economy and sharing of resources, or how we commerce, I guess. New ideas about that.
Right. New models emerging. There's an interview with Catherine. We had her on the show a couple years ago back at, you can get that at Reality Sandwich Radio. Well, Heidi, I wanted to thank you so much for connecting with us. I know you're calling in from the office, so I'll let you run. But thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for inspiring others to step up and make a difference.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Take care.
You too.
So that was Kiva.com for everybody.
Kiva.org.
Sorry, thank you. Yep. Kiva.org for everybody that's listening. K-I-V-A, Kiva.org.
Now, I was listening. It's really fascinating because I was listening briefly yesterday to an interview on another station with Paul Polak, who wrote a book called Out of Poverty. And he was speaking on this very concept about how you need to go to these countries and ask the local people, you know, what would be helpful to them? What do they need? Rather than those of us in the West just saying, you know, oh, here's what they need to get out of poverty. Let's give them a bunch of different stuff. Let's just, you know, go there and make them dependent on us in some sort of a way. And the author of Out of Poverty was just talking about how he's done, you know, 3,000 interviews of people that are making a dollar a day and asking them, you know, what, you know, why are you poor? What do you need here? And how can you be helped? And I just found it absolutely fascinating. He told these stories about, you know, farmers getting a pump and irrigating more land and then being able to grow foods in the wintertime when others couldn't, and how they then take that local money and spend it locally and hire local people. Really just amazing applications of getting right on the front lines and having a positive impact. So to that end, we're going to turn to our next guest.
Great.
Eddie Kramlich, we also know, is a colleague of ours from Toastmasters, and he gave a speech last night. He actually went overseas, stepped out of his normal corporate job and said, I want to go over to another part of the planet and have an impact and talk to local people. And he's been part of another organization he's going to tell us all about and learn more about his experience. So welcome to Reality Sandwich, Eddie.
Thank you for having me here today.
So you gave this incredible speech last night about your experience, and you actually went to Thailand. Now, what intrigued you to be curious about what was going on in a remote village in Thailand and want to assist?
I think where it started is I had read an article in the New York Times talking about a kind of a new trend that is happening where you can volunteer abroad. So many people choose their next vacation, and it maybe is tropical, but you go there and you maybe stay in a hotel. And that didn't really appeal for me. I wanted to do something a little different. So after reading this article, you can go and actually volunteer on a project. I've got my day job, but with these projects, a lot of times you just jump right in and they give you a task to do, and you can take some of the planning out as, you know, a working professional. You can just go to a destination. They're going to get you started.
Now, this is, again, this fascinates me because this is kind of a new thing, right? You couldn't do this 5-10 years ago, and now there's this opportunity to actually, you know, step out of your regular life and go. So when do you decide to actually do it?
It was looking to do a big trip. I just turned 30 years old, and I wanted to make a difference, and I wanted to feel like I was making an impact. You read about these, talking about the disconnection, you read these articles, you read about, you know, rice prices being high, like all those things, you don't really feel a connection. So I wanted to do something where I went and was immersed in someone else's culture.
Mm-hmm.
And where I found the program, I was with the Kum Loy Development Foundation in Chiang Rai, Thailand. The way I found it was, there's a great website where you can, any country you may want to travel to, it's called volunteerabroad.com. And you can go look at any country you want to do and look at different programs that are available where you can donate as little as 3 days to a year of your time if you're traveling.
Hmm. And so what did you do?
Well, after finding the Kum Loy Development Foundation, I paid $645, which paid for my cost of the program and the project that they put me on. I could either have worked in a school with orphan children, or I could have the project that I worked on, which was a construction project to build toilets. The sanitation is very poor in a lot of these villages.
So a lot of listeners may be thinking, wow, you went overseas to have an impact across the country and you're making toilets.
At first I thought it was rather strange because it's something that we take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
After watching a Peace Corps volunteer's video about her travels in Madagascar, one of the things that she was determined to help with was sanitation. And toilets is the one thing where the extra money that they have, they are not investing it in having what we perceive as a necessity. It's not necessarily a necessity in a lot of these villages.
Hmm. Is that because they don't know they need one, or they just don't have, it's just not a priority because they don't have enough money to get one, or?
Well, in the working with the foundation that I is, the way that they identified this, because this was something that the villagers brought up, is that I was with the Lahu village, which is one of the ethnic tribes that's in the hills. Well, a lot of the Lahu tribes and the Aka tribes live right next to each other, and so they share resources. Well, one part of the village, which is the Aka tribe, came forward to the foundation going, the Kum Loy Development Foundation, saying, could you talk to the other part of the village and help them build toilets? Because they are just going down to the river and doing their business, and it's going downstream, and other villages don't like that because that's where they get a source of some of their, you know, different water, not their drinking water necessarily, but a lot of their working water. So that was identified by the villagers on another part of the villagers that they didn't value that. So it's not that everyone doesn't value it. It's just a lot of times they don't dedicate their resources to those issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was fascinating to see that. And I think that was probably one of the most challenging or awkward and eye-opening experiences, that the logic of the way we look at the world doesn't apply in these communities the same way. Their values of family, community are very much different, and it makes you feel uncomfortable at times looking at your own values against theirs.
Hmm.
Well, they're just living life. I mean, the way that they always have and the way that they do, and as the environment changes, i.e., you know, development of cultures surrounding them, right? And some people get stuck in their own patterns and they don't realize what their impact is having, and there needs to be eventually some bumping up against one another. And often outside facilitation can help to communicate that. And this sounds like a prime example of that sort of a thing, where it wasn't as if they were intentionally, you know, messing up the river, and they may not even haven't realized what's going on downstream. But there was able to be communication and able to be some sort of support to bring them forward in their development and by meeting them where they are now, right?
Yeah, so you find a lot of this grind between their traditional way of life, and they're really just working as hard as they can the way that they always have, and then you see this grind against modern life moving into their lifestyle. So the village I had electricity and some modern food that they would bring up from the city, and yet they still ate a lot of what they made there in the village. But what I found was fascinating because it's like looking back 50, 60 years where people used to litter. Right now, I'd be horrified if I ever littered and threw something on the ground. But in the villagers, all these people just throw their stuff on the ground. There's no value in littering. But if you think 50 years ago, there was anti-littering campaigns that made something that was commonplace to be driving in your car to throw your wrappers outside to the side of the road, and you wouldn't think twice about it. Now, it's become taboo to litter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a 50-year process that we've done here in the U.S. and other parts of the world. It's not very uncommon that they're going to look back 50 years the way they lived their life and say, we would never have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And littering was just, it was in your face. It beautiful village, but here the children litter, the parents litter, and it's hard to digest a little bit.
Like what kind of things are they throwing out? I mean,
Because like water, I mean, and you see it a lot. I mean, it's been becoming a pet peeve of mine is water bottles. It's a great way to drink water, but if you've heard about the garbage patch outside the Golden Gate Bridge of all of this broken down plastic bottles that make it, and it's swirling outside the Golden Gate. You know, we're having an impact on our world, and education helps people move in the right direction. But what people don't know, they just continue to do.
Yeah, and actually, we know a man that's going to be doing something. Actually, they'll take a little small deviation into the garbage patch, the plastic island. We have a friend, his name is Tom Brady, and he has something called Endurance Island, and he's going to be doing an extreme athletic event to both promote autism awareness as well as plastics in the ocean. And so it's just sort of interesting to see more and more people, because absolutely that's a big issue, but totally separate issue and off topic. But I just wanted to say that because that's going to be coming up in July. So going back to the story about are you saying that because they had these more modern some modern probably products from the bigger cities, they were littering some of the wrappers and the plastic packages and things like that?
So like here's one example where it's a bit ironic. Our village had electricity because the Thai government had brought it in, and they have TVs, which I didn't know it would be there, and they're watching soap operas. And yet the house right next to them doesn't have toilets. So you see this imbalance of, you know, what our value system. If I try to apply my value system onto theirs, it's painful watching some of it. And yet that's just where they put value in. They probably feel more modern having a TV and watching soap operas like the West and developed areas. And yet they haven't put value on, you know, basic sanitation services or running water.
Hmm.
Welcome back to Reality Sandwich. We were just talking during the break about a great Reality Sandwich subject, the positive impact of women in the world. And so we're here with Eddie Kramlich. He's going to tell us a little bit more about his experience in Thailand. And Julie?
And so there's tell us about, so this particular organization that you were involved with that you did this project for, that it's run by a husband and wife team, is that correct? Or
yes, it was started by Paul Hancock, who was an attorney that went to, well, studied law at Oxford and then went to INSEAD Business School, and his wife, who is from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and she has an MBA too. So this couple were living a great lifestyle, living in their flat in London, and, you know, had done very well for themselves, but felt like there's something more that they wanted to do. They had hit a certain position, and they weren't satisfied, you know, with an ideal lifestyle you would hope to achieve. And so after doing some volunteer, they started their own foundation in Thailand.
I find it so interesting, by the way, before we even go into that, how we, most of us, aspire to having a lot of money, that we think success and a happy life is when we achieve certain financial things. But then you always hear these stories about people that they have all that and then they're like, okay, that didn't make me happy. And then they end up doing something that doesn't really require money, but that helps other people. So it's an interesting observation of human character, behavior, something.
Yeah, I think we all really want meaning. We all really want to feel good, and we really want to have a sense that what we're doing is positively impacting other people in some regard. And here's, you know, these folks who, you know, had the ability to turn their life on in a really meaningful way. So these, what's the name of the foundation?
Again? It's the Kumloy Development Foundation, and I'll spell that. It's KHOMLOY.com. Oh, pardon me, .org. And it, yes, so. And a Kum Loy is this type of Thailand lantern that it's kind of like an air balloon and it'll float up. And so they have a festival there, and that's what the organization's named after.
Hmm. Very nice.
Now, you were speaking about women and how a lot of the focus here is on women in these local countries and the reality that women drive what really gets done.
Well, you did. Talking with Paul Hancock and Patricia Solar, that with the foundation is, well, we had some. It was interesting to look at the role that women had, and then a lot of the initiatives that they had around actually engaging the women, because that was the way that you could make sure that it was benefiting the community in a whole.
Hmm.
And the role that men and women have in the villages was interesting to watch, and being immersed in, you know, their village community. First off, is the women. The women prepare all the meals. There were so many children in the villages, so children is a very big part of their life. And the women would, a lot of times, carry them around in, I don't know what you would call them, but kind of the cloth.
Right, like some sort of sling or something.
A sling would be the best word. And here they are all day long. They're taking care of the kids. Some of them are doing different weaving. But Patricia Solar said, you know what? Women are the ones that have created community, have created modern civilization. They're the ones that have focused on education. They're the ones. Mm. And she was so determined that women started agriculture, not men.
Hmm.
Although men might get the credit for the hunter-gatherers. Mm-hmm. No, the women are the ones saying, hey, if we just stay here, we can stay in this community and do agriculture. So she was pretty adamant about her feelings of women are the reason we have agriculture today.
And I guess that would make sense, because women are the ones that traditionally are the nurturers, so they would, I would think, in general, be more concerned or interested that the community and all of, you know, whether it's their children and then their husband and their mother and their family members are all sort of taken care of. So it would make sense that they're the ones on a day-to-day basis who feel the connection and the want to help everyone else, and so it would make sense that they would be the ones leading all of the efforts in that area.
Right, right.
Hmm.
So can anyone go to this organization and learn and go take a trip like you did?
Yes. I think that's the great part is they have three different initiatives that they're working on. One is education, where they're taking Montessori and they're taking a lot of these daycares, but helping train teachers in the Montessori method, which is more kind of engaging on application. The second one is agriculture. There was two projects. One was a pineapple project, helping the villagers understand how to do that, how to plant and cultivate. So there's some initiatives around just the type of foods that they're raising. And the second one, which I was really excited to see, is the irrigation. Getting these pumps that cost $180 into these villages where right now they're only growing one crop a year, or just one rice crop a year. They could do up to two. So these pumps can irrigate up to an acre.
Hmm.
A lot of it's tests of concept that you've got to work within their logic system to get them to use and see the importance of planting another crop during the year. And the last one was special projects that I worked on, such as the one I worked on.
Hmm.
Just on that crop planting thing, I heard the statistic this morning of there are 525 million acres of farmland in the world, of which 450 million are less than 5 acres.
Hmm.
So that most of the real farming going on is on these little tiny spaces where they're learning and we're helping to get over there and provide knowledge and resources, but they're learning more and more about how to make the most out of these little tiny spaces to feed people at the local level. And when you do that, you get more local investment in their own communities, and this has a far greater impact from as you're sharing with us.
Yeah, and particularly with the water pump project that Paul Hancock is working on, it's very interesting because a lot of time you'll have annual rivers that could be used for irrigation, but they don't have the infrastructure for irrigation. So right now, only during the wet season, they plant one rice crop that the whole village, I mean, the whole community will help cultivate. But then for the rest of the year, these lands just sit there. But what he's trying to do with these water pumps is it costs $180 where you can irrigate up to a acre of land, so you could do another crop during the year.
Mm.
Now that extra money goes into the community. I've been watching very closely because it's been in the news a lot with just rice prices, and Thailand is the breadbasket of rice, the largest exporter of rice, and here is land just sitting idle that could be irrigated if these communities know how to do it and the education that it takes to get these pumps in there and utilized.
Mm. Mm. What did they find, Paul Hancock and his wife, after probably, I'm assuming, being there for quite a long time and talking to the local people? What have they learned about working with communities and giving them things or helping them out? What could we learn from them?
Something that continued to come up in the conversations was a lot of it's hit and miss, because you walk in with your idea, like, this is something we need to work on, irrigation, and yet where you come to this hit and miss part is that you have to work within their logic systems. It needs to be their ideas. And having talked with other Peace Corps volunteers, is you're always struggling. You may have 1,000 good ideas, but only one or two is going to get adopted because it's what that community sees as valuable. Mm. So you have to work really hard to have conversations to get people to the same place and see value in it, because their value system is not the same way our value system works.
Mm-hmm.
So with each of the projects, like, sometimes a great idea, but they just couldn't get it implemented because the villagers didn't grab on. And then sometimes they were shocked by some of the ideas that they had the village absolutely loved.
Hmm.
Hmm. I would also think that the villagers, of course, would know more what they need than outsiders anyway, in some cases. So, of course, engaging them, not only so they're on board with the idea, but because they might have some really better ideas of what they actually need. You know, it's easy for us to come in and say, oh, this would be helpful for you, but it might just not be part of their lifestyle or something that's as important as something else. So that's really very interesting.
Well, and we learn that whether no matter who it is that we're trying to help in some way, often we feel that we know what's best for somebody else and we'll try to impose that on them. You should be doing this. Or, hey, you native Aborigine people, here's a house to live in, which is an experiment that the Australians learned many years ago is not something that they can just do.
What happened?
That progress on people.
What happened when they tried to do that?
Oh, they didn't know how to live in a house. They needed to build fire, so they took a door off the thing, or they made a hole in the floor. The wood was fuel for fire. Fire was a much more important and knowledgeable and usable resource for them. They had no real conception of what it was to live in a house, you know. So this idea of being much more meaningful about the giving and the understanding of the difference in the development of a particular group is absolutely vital in being successful with the helping, whether it's helping a friend on a project or whether it's having an impact on the other side of the planet. And this is really what we've been speaking today, whether earlier we were speaking with Heidi, who was telling us all about Kiva.org and how her desire to make a difference led to her learning about this organization that facilitates microfinance, interesting kind of loans where you can actually put forth as much as you can to help somebody across the planet with a very specific project. And you can learn what impact you're having and see the difference that it's making. And then help to continue a positive loop of reinforcement and involvement of more people at local levels and empowering themselves right on the front lines. And that's where we all know that things change. Because I think the more that we read about big government expenditures and money being wasted, the more disenchanted we get. And it quells our own inner desire to be connected, to help, to learn. That's why I'm inspired to hear of new methods and new ways of using this technology and new organizations that are helping people like Eddie here to actually, you know, go across the planet and have a positive impact and to fulfill his life in that way and to teach that and share that with others. And people like Heidi who, you know, decided she wanted $25 she could do. And the internet is there to help her help somebody across the planet. Mm. So,
are you going to do any more for projects?
Yes, I really want to continue to help the Kamloy Foundation buy pumps. These things cost $180, not a lot of money for us, but if it might help irrigate,
right,
you know, 1 acre of land, that's one thing I want to do. Also, my sister and I are looking to climb Kilimanjaro next year, and yet I've been adamant about tar. You and I have to go find a similar project in Africa and find a project that we can help out because it's such an eye-opening experience. It really helps you understand even more about yourself as much as the culture that you're in.
Mm, wow, that's great.
Well, thanks
great.
For sharing your story.
Yes.
Please give the website one more time where people can learn about the organization.
Yes, it's the Kamloy Development Foundation, and the website is khomloy.org, and it was started by Paul Hancock and Patricia Solar, and it's in Chiang Rai, Thailand.
Thank you so much for being on today and all your great work.
Thank you for having me here. It's been a great opportunity.
Thanks for sharing. We've been exploring broader notions of our collective human reality across the planet today and learning some fascinating new insights. So you can hear this show and all past shows of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com. I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist and health for living advocate with Health for Living, and I'm here with Julie.
I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Health for Living. And you can hear our show every Thursday at noon, A Palatable Taste of the Truth on your lunchtime hour on Reality Sandwich. Oh,